Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This week on Underdogs, it's the College Football National Championship game. Are the Washington Huskies a worthy dog in the Pac-12's last stand?
And then we got your Week 18 so-called meaningless games. Ha! They're meaningful for the Underdogs Underdogs contest.
The cry goes up both far and near for Underdog. Underdog.
Countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
By George, the dream is alive.
Underdog.
Then I guess there's only one thing left to do. Win the whole fucking thing.
It's the Underdogs back with you, the first episode of 2024. Happy New Year, everybody. I am Jordan Brenner, joined as always by my co-host, Peter Keating. And back with us for the third time this season, special guest, Mike Golic Jr. Gojo. Happy New Year, guys. How are you?
Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Jordan. Happy New Year, Mike. Now we, like the Joan Rivers to your Johnny Carson, Jordan, I think is... to use my outdated analogies. Jordan, I had a great holiday with one exception. I hope you did too. I mailed my Christmas gifts to relatives in Detroit, but they got returned because the recipients were ruled ineligible receivers.
Ooh. Oh my God.
Wow, we how are long starting 2021.
On that note, Mike, are you interested in a permanent co-hosting gig?
I don't know if I'm going to be able to compete with the law. Like I was eating out of the palm of his hand there, ready for holiday goodness, and hit me over the head with that. So I don't know if I can compete with that. I'll try, though.
Well, there you go. Well, we did. We spent our whole NFL episode right before the holidays, Mike, saying things like Kyler Murray Christmas and Lamari Christmas. So it just gets it will get worse as we go on.
Well, what was the highlight of your Christmas, New Year's week? We, you know, other than blessing the world with not giving them a show, what did you enjoy most?
Talking to me, Jordan? Well, I got
both
to see
of you. What was
I got to you? I got to see both my in-laws and my parents, which is a championship week no matter how you slice it.
I got to see both my nephew and my new niece. My nephew is about 15 months old. My niece is about 6 weeks old. And so I always joke because I'm, you know, a single father of none, but I have a lot of friends. I have went to college in the Midwest, which means they got married young and started having kids young. And so I'm board certified up to like 8 years old, which means 14 months and 6 weeks. I got that stuff down. We're brushing off some of the dust with the newborn, but it's been pretty good and was certainly fun to hang out with both of them.
Well, I got to take a family vacation, 10 of us. The highlight was watching my mother, who is an old school pre-Title IX jock, have a football catch in the pool with Candace Parker, which basically
How did that happen?
Candace Parker happened to be at this place. I recognized her immediately. Told my mom, who was out of her mind, and there was a football in the pool, and my son and my mom were throwing with her. She was so cool. Her kids were cool. Her wife was cool. I said to her, look, we'll be out of your hair. You know, it's a pleasure to meet you. And she's like, you're not in our hair at all. So like, just awesome, down to earth. Great to meet her. That was the highlight. The low light was a couple days later, I got COVID. So, you know, mixed bag. But we're back with you. We're here. And we are ready to talk some college football because we've got a championship game. But I don't know if we have a pure underdog. You got Michigan favored by 4.5 points, but this is hardly a one-side affair, guys. So from an underdog podcast perspective, I feel like we're a little out of our depth here. Mr. Gojo, what do you think? Is this a case of one team clearly being the better team, or is this more of a toss-up?
I think it's more of a toss-up. Like, Michigan is the more complete team. That's probably the way we're supposed to say it, just because – their defense is so great. The offense is at least foundationally built the right way. They've got a veteran quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. Like, the wild card with Washington and the difficult part about placing them for most of the season has been their defense is not statistically good, and they also don't play good the vast majority of the time, but they are timely. They are like the early Mahomes Chiefs, where they have just enough playmakers on that side of the ball to go ahead and hand that thing back to the buzzsaw that is their offense. So it kind of makes them a complicated out.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and it, you almost have to recalibrate your brain a little bit after watching the game against Texas, because Washington looked unstoppable offensively, and you have to remember you're playing against a Big 12 defense, not Michigan, because, you know, you watch, especially Michael Penix is great, but those receivers make him even better. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I think everything about the offense serves every part of it. Like, they've got the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line. The best offensive line unit in college football went to the Washington Huskies mm-hmm. this year. And they are absolutely deserving, but they also have a play caller in Ryan Grubb who does so many things. I mean, the amount of protections they throw at you in the body of that game, because I actually think Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinator for Texas, like, Big 12 defense means a lot more than it used to. Like, that's a conference that's undergone a pretty severe renaissance in the last, I'd say, 5-6 years when it comes with that. And if you looked at Texas's defensive personnel to a man across the board, they were so much bigger than Washington. It was almost comical looking at, like, Parker Brailsford, the 275-pound center for Washington, going up against the Outland Trophy winner Tavondre Sweat, who's like 360 on a good day. And so they had beef. They did a lot of things up front that I think Michigan's going to be able to do and have success with. But to your point, Michael Penix helps those receivers because he puts the ball in great spots, because he evaded a lot of pressure that was there. They just weren't able to get him down. And so when you've got a line that's good enough, a quarterback that's skilled, receivers that are NFL guys, and a play caller who's going to throw so much at that the players on their team can also absorb, like, to be able to call those varied amounts of plays, to do the things schematically they do, you got to have guys with a high aptitude. So it all kind of works together.
Let me follow up on that really quick, and then we'll let Peter in his purple sweater wax poetic on Washington. But so I don't want to kiss your ass here, but I've long thought, since I was a kid, honestly, I thought offensive line is the most important position in mm-hmm. football. And I just think everything flows from, if you can open up a hole, I can walk through it for 4 yards. If you can protect long enough, somebody's going to get open and somebody's going to be able to throw them the ball. What I found interesting watching the Michigan-Alabama game, and it was the first time, certainly different from when Michigan played Georgia a couple of years ago and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's the first time I really saw Michigan in one of these games. I'm like, you know what? They are every bit as strong, athletic, physical, et cetera, on both lines. They're not getting manhandled by an SEC team. You mentioned the physicality or lack thereof of Washington's line. From what you saw in terms of what Michigan did to Alabama, will that line hold up against a defense like Michigan's?
Yes, absolutely. Like, it'll similar problems. Like I said, Texas had opportunities to get to Penix. There were pressures there. Like, I'd be curious to see the pressure percentage versus what we saw was a lack of sack production in that game, whereas mm-hmm. Michigan was the total opposite. You had 5 sacks in the first half of that game. But the thing I look back and going back and watching all those sacks from the Alabama game, and just the way Michigan's defense is structured, Jesse Minter runs an NFL operation over there. And so they throw a lot at you. All 5 of Michigan's sacks were different looks. All 5 came from different spots, but only 2 of them in my mind were sacks where it was one side physically beating the other. The others were free rushers. They were guys coming from spots. They were eye violations by Alabama not being on the same page. Washington is always on the same page. It's my favorite thing about that group is the task for offensive line. The way we always phrase is 5 guys got to see things through one set of eyes. Washington's group sees the same picture. Their quarterback sees the same picture. And so if they're going to be wrong based on how they ID a front, they're wrong together. So Michael always knows where the pressure is going to be coming from, where the free hit's going to be coming from. They're physically capable. Washington's offensive line, extremely athletic east and west. But I think their biggest advantage is they are so together and they still understand how they fit into Ryan Grubb's overall plan and the protection plan for that team.
So this is amazing because we're all on the same page. All my initial notes about this game are all about line of scrimmage stuff, about specifically Washington's offensive line, their lateral quickness, their movement in unison, their execution on stunts or play, right? They have taken not needing to be 380 pounds and fast at the same time as far as the concept can go, as far as I can see. And you're right. I mean, Michigan's front 7 played amazing, at least through the first half. I mean, six sacks. Then, and at the end of the game, they had the game-winning stop.
Yep.
But, I mean, Washington's given up 11 sacks all season. Now, you can talk about the competition. You can talk about, you know, how that's a matter of scheme. But, it is amazing. I mean, Penix, against top 25 defenses, okay, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 1,400 yards in 4 games. I mean, they've played tough comp. They've played tough competition very well. So, and that's something else. You know, Texas was the number 3 team in the country in terms of rushing defense this season. I mean, Alabama's good, but they did give up a few more yards per game than Texas. And so, you know, whether they're going to be able to keep Penix upright and whether they're going to be able to rush the ball at all, those are the key questions for this game. And I kind of think the answer is yes, for all the reasons that you guys are talking about. I'll also say, I don't know if you have any prop bets or any player bets you want to throw out, Jordan, but Dylan Johnson to score the first touchdown of the game, as he did in the last game, is plus 800. That seems like a really good value to me, because I think
if he can walk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why it's not plus 300 or minus 120, like he has to score any touchdown at all.
X-ray's negative.
If there's ever a game you're going to make yourself go play in, it'll be this one. I think they're going to be able to move the ball on the ground a little bit, which also eases up things on the quarterback.
Mike, you agree? I don't see them running on Michigan at all.
So much of Washington outside of the gaudy passing numbers, because that's the lead dog for their offense, right? And I saw Jeff Schwartz tweeting about this the other day. There's no 50-50 balls in Washington's offense. They're 70-30. They're 75-25. Yeah. The receivers and the quarterback are on such a good page that it's the Golden State Warriors. It messes up the math to the point where defense and other normal tenets of the sport kind of become a little less important, but they're timely. And you saw Washington down on the goal line, bunch of tackle over stuff, able to clear lanes there and short yardage. There, I always used to joke when you're like on 3rd and 1 and you get a 1.5 yard run, call that an efficient run. They're not all pretty, but you get them efficient. Washington's rushing attack, I think, can do that same thing against Michigan, mostly because, again, and this is the thing I'm most interested about, who's going to dictate the terms? Michigan's defense dictated the terms to Bama. They made Bama adjust. They called the shots on that. Washington, because they can present so many things to you, Michigan's defense isn't going to have the same level, or at least it won't be as easy to go downhill and do the same things, because they change so much. And that includes the running game that, by the way, includes Michael Penix Jr. Now, like those quarterback run reps, that's Indiana Michael Penix Jr. That stuff wasn't on the scout team card for them going into that game. And now it's got to be for Michigan, who's got one more thing to worry about.
Well, where do you think that came from? Why would they hold back on that all year and then suddenly unleash him that way?
I mean, you know, Michael Penix, I mean, as we start to look towards draft season, like, we know the injury history is going to be a part of the conversation with him. And so you're worried that the guy who's the linchpin of your offense that hasn't really needed quarterback run for a vast majority of the year would get in a position where he's compromised. So they had to trust that, hey, you saw he took care of himself. He got down on those runs. He wasn't trying to put a shoulder into guys or Josh Allen, the end of those things. But I think it's being judicious with that, with the health of your quarterback in mind, understanding how important he is to your offense.
He also got involved in a few Pac-12 shootouts, right?
I mean, yeah.
Mike and I have a bone to pick with the football world in a second. But before we do that, real quick, predictions. It sure sounds like you guys are both leaning Washington.
Well, I know we're not necessarily making picks against the spread or looking at betting markets here, but 74% of the bets on this game and 76% of the money is on Washington. And Washington's 5-0 straight up, not against the spread, straight up as an underdog under Kalen DeBoer. The whole situation suggests to me that at the very least, the spread's too big. You know what I mean? I think Washington's undervalued here. And I'm wearing purple. We've talked about the Pac-12 all season. At least, I mean, for irrational reasons, I'm rooting for Washington. Makes it hard to go against them. Say the spread's too small. So, yeah, what the hell? I'll pick Washington either way.
Yeah, I'm leaning Washington. It scares me because I hear a lot of people doing that. And usually when everything leans one way, I prepare myself for the alternative. But I think it boils down to, and this was the same concern I had going into the Alabama game that never ended up coming to fruition because that passing attack kind of fell apart early on, is can they win a shootout? Because Washington's going to get theirs on offense. Can J.J. McCarthy go out there and do the things in the passing attack they did early in the season against elevated competition? Again, Washington defense is a softer landing spot, but Jabbar Muhammad's made enough plays. That linebacker room can show up. Braylon Trice got after the quarterback well in the semifinal game. Can J.J. McCarthy, if they got to turn this into a drop back thing to keep pace, can he hold up in that? I have doubts still.
I don't even know if that's going to be necessary. They ran the ball. Look, Texas ran the ball down Washington's throat when they committed to it. I think this is a Michigan running game the whole way. I think McCarthy can make plays. Look, I'm scared too, and I feel like there's some sort of karma going on here that, like, all right, you're going to decimate the Pac-12, fine, we're going to win the national championship this year. Like, it just,
yeah,
some force is bigger than that at work. I am rooting for Michigan. I have a lot of Michigan friends. I'd like to see them happy. So I think that's the biggest thing. If look, if this is just a Michigan manhandles the line of scrimmage, their running backs, you know, picking up chunks every play, then I don't care how many yards Washington passes for, they'll make a mistake here and there. But real quick, before we move on, Gojo, you and I are outraged at the same rule. Sometimes rules in sports don't manifest themselves until the worst possible moment. And there was something that happened at the end of that Washington-Texas game that is so inexplicable to me that I don't know how it exists.
Yeah.
People talked about it at the time, but when on third down, Texas is out of timeouts, Dylan Johnson runs the ball, that could have kneeled, okay, but runs the ball, gets hurt. The clock stops. The fact that it didn't restart when the player was removed from the field and it doesn't restart until the snap is so strange, is so wrong. It's penalizing a team for being injured. And I don't understand where the rule came from, why it still exists, but Mike, our mission for the next few months is to get rid of this rule.
We got to find a way. The only person I would count on to know the etymology of something like that is Bill Curry. I've often joked, my dad shared a broadcast booth with Bill Curry when he was calling college football games when I was a kid. And Bill used to always call the house phone back when you just had a landline. And he would leave these long, sprawling voicemails because he's got that very slow Southern drawl. And Bill Curry knew the story about the etymology of everything, touching the gloves and boxing, all that stuff when I was a kid. So I'm sure he would know, and I'm sure he would agree. This is silly, and we need to change it because you're absolutely right. You shouldn't be penalized because your guy got his foot hurt.
Right, and there are dangerous situations. I mean, I had someone point out on Twitter that, like, you could have a team trying to injure players in that situation,
right?
Like,
to stop the
clock. Opens up a real slippery slope. But speaking of slippery slopes, that's what it's been for us, picking NFL underdogs all year. And we'll be back with the final underdog contest of the season right after this.
Underdog, underdog.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Underdog, underdog.
We're back, and for the last time this season, and maybe the last time ever, if certain people have their way, it's the underdogs, underdogs contest, where once again, we have to pick underdogs in the NFL games. They have to be a dog of at least 3 points or more. You get 1 point if they cover, 2 points if they win outright, and three if they win outright as a dog of six or more. The sad news is, this contest is over. Team Sarah, as we call it, our producer Sarah McCrory and our rotating panel of guests have clinched first place with a total of 34.5 points. Gojo, you've contributed to that with 2 weeks already. You can tack on here. I'm in second with 25 points. Peter is in last with 22.5.
The order. So there is a live competition between you and me for second place.
Correct. Correct.
Well, there you go.
All right. So on that note, the order this week: Gojo, me, Peter. Take it away with the first pick.
All right. Yeah. And by the way, no one go back and look and see how many I contributed in being right to that overall cause. Just assume it was all of them every time I was on. That being said, first pick to start off here, I'm going to go Bears +3 on the road against the Packers.
There it is.
Obviously, you know, Jordan, the Packers all been great, but I think the Bears have a real chance to play spoiler motivated. Justin Fields has obviously been playing for his football future every week and has been doing it really well. This last week was probably the best week of Justin Fields overall football that we've seen. So I'll ride with those guys.
All right. Going with the pack. Well, I am making a strategic move because I want to close this gap as much as possible.
Are you like checking and a hand of poker? What do you mean?
No, it's the likely move. Look, there's only two games where you can get the full 3 points. So I'm going to go big or go home. I'm going to take the Commanders +13 points against the Cowboys. Oh. If there was ever a situation for the Cowboys to choke, it's this one. Not as good on the road as we've seen as Dak is at home, but this is purely about getting the full 3 points and giving myself a chance to at least within striking distance of Team Sarah. So I don't have a lot of football reasons to make this pick. It's just a math game. Commanders +13. Let's go.
Washington has let the bettors down again and again and again. They're 0-3-1 as a home dog. They're horrible, but I guess good luck because it's the only way Dallas isn't going to win the division. Give me Baltimore at home, 3.5-point underdog to Pittsburgh with Mason Rudolph. Give me this all day long. Here's the stat. When everyone else is talking about momentum, interim coaches, benching their players, here's the stat to keep in mind about this week. And this is from my man, Anthony DeBondo at the Action Network, who's become one of my favorite analysts. This is amazing. In week 18, all time, teams that must win to reach the playoffs facing teams that have no motivation, their playoff spot or lack thereof already locked in, are 18-28. 39% goes down to 33% when the line is 3 or bigger. Pittsburgh is the only team in the league with a winning record that has been outscored. Baltimore hasn't played any games this year as a home underdog, but as an underdog, they're 2-0 against the spread, beating the spread by 13 points. Of course, that's with Lamar Jackson, but Tyler Huntley's capable. In fact, you can win bar bets on this. Tyler Huntley made the Pro Bowl last year. Yes, he did. He replaced Josh Allen when he got injured. So Baltimore is a home underdog with a great team. They hate the Steelers. They got a Pro Bowl quarterback. 51% of bets, but not more than 90% of the money is on Baltimore. Give me the Ravens.
That is the Baltimore team that like cares enough to win all the preseason games all the time. So you're right. They major in games that are air quotes meaningless.
Second pick, riding again, my Carolina Panthers, 5.5 points. They're getting against Tampa Bay. Again, Tampa Bay, everything on the line. Carolina, only a chance to play a spoiler, but you know they're not tanking. They got a bunch of draft picks on the line. Carolina 3-3-1 against the spread as a home underdog this year. They got blown out last week, which means it's a good week to bet on them this week. It's a divisional late season game. And the biggest thing is Tampa Bay has been very lucky. Carolina, the unluckiest team in football this year. So give me Carolina against Tampa Bay.
All right. With my final pick of the year, I'm going to take the Rams +3.5 against the 49ers. Look, the 49ers are going to play some starters, but we know McCaffrey's out. I imagine Trent Williams won't play. This game doesn't really matter much for the Rams either. They're either going to be the 6 or 7 seed, but if they care about moving up to the 6, you know, I could see them putting forth a pretty good effort. They're hot. You know, now look, a Mason Crosby field goal and they wouldn't look so hot right now, but I was happy with that outcome. Helps the Giants draft position. I love the way the Rams are playing offensively right now. I think their starters will play more and longer than the Niners. I think they want to send a message here to the rest of the NFC that they're a team to be reckoned with in the playoffs. I think we'll talk a lot about them actually next week's show when we discuss underdogs for the playoffs. I think they're going to be a very trendy deep seed. Let's put it that way. So give me the Rams plus 3.5 at the 49ers. And Gojo, take us out here.
All right, that was a good one. That's probably what I wanted to do there. So
that's what I do to people.
You know what? Since I already got this in the bag, I'll take the Titans as a home dog. Vrabel's pissed off. The Jags have been such a hot and cold, inconsistent team. I understand Trevor Lawrence, I think, is practicing on a limited basis at this point, so there's a chance he could be out there. But that hasn't always meant a ton anyway. That wide receiver room's been beat up. The defense has started to let it out. And maybe if we get a classic Mike Vrabel make something out of nothing game here to end the season.
Tennessee's been losing games in overtime, losing games by field goals, right? I mean, it's Vrabel as a home underdog. I'm surprised they lasted this long in our little draft.
Am I the only one, by the way, who would have been just as happy with Colts Texans as the Sunday night game as the Bills Dolphins game?
I've been rooting for the Colts all season. They were my preseason pick to beat expectations, and I haven't seen them a lot. I haven't gotten
right,
to see them a lot.
Right, and my preseason pick was the Texans. So yeah, it would have been me and you, head to head, mano a mano.
That would have been our first live cast opportunity. But
fantastic.
We would have dragged Golic back on for our versioning of the Manning cast.
I would have been just as honored as Arnold Schwarzenegger and his donkey making their way on there.
If Gojo was the third member of this bastardized version of a Manning cast, what guests would we get? Like a dog that does a frisbee on its nose, or like.
Oh my God! No, you should get a Red Panda to come through here.
Red Panda, we would have no chance of getting. Like,
well, at this point, we stand a much better chance of getting Tommy DeVito's agent.
Oh,
there we go.
I want Tyrod Taylor's agent. All right. Well, on that note, Gojo, thanks as always. Can't wait to talk with you about reshaping the entire college sports universe in the future. Until then,
we really know how to lure him back, Brenner.
We're gonna fix it all. Damn it, we're gonna fix it all.
Happy 2024, everybody. Enjoyed this show. We'll be back with a big-time NFL playoff preview next week.
The Underdogs Podcast is a production of Meadowlark Media and the DraftKings Network. Our show is produced by Sarah McCrory. Our executive producer is Neely Lohman. Follow us on Twitter, @PeterKeatingNJ and @JordanBrenner. And tell a friend, subscribe to the Underdogs Podcast anywhere you like to listen, and be sure to tune in again next week.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.